Our message this morning is offered by Sarah. Sarah, is your name pronounced Radican? Yeah, like radical. Awesome. Sarah Radican. Come on up.
I wish I wrote these words because I feel like I found a soul sibling in the writer, but these are also words written by the Reverend Anna Tolu. And they go like this. They can't steal my joy. That's the mantra I've been repeating since a gathering of religious professionals a year ago, in which Reverend Viola Abbott declared it in glad defiance. They can't steal my joy. Her words rang in my brain and in my bones, and that carried me through last January, through most of the first 2 weeks of the current administration. A couple of weeks later, in the early part of February, I took my older boys to see one of those big touring Broadway musicals. It was a great show. The kids had a blast, as you can imagine. I love theater, and I, too, admired the talented singers and dancers, the production, the story, but I found myself holding back from the poignancy and exuberance, which is not normal for me. Then the drive home, my hands on the steering wheel, the world seemed to dim. And the weight of those first 2 weeks, the heaviness of them, came down on me all at once. The fear and anger and despair and violence of so many. So many. Do you remember the frantic pace of that first month? The first 100 days? The whole past year, for that matter. My spirit felt like a butterfly pinned to a board, and I realized with horror, they stole my joy. They stole my joy. I took a breath and I clutched the steering wheel. Once that initial moment of shock passed, I began questioning my own claim, holding it up against my core beliefs. Is that true? Did they steal my joy? And an answer came. No one can steal my joy. No one gave me joy. Joy is an expression of love, and love cannot be forced or taken. I had lost my sense of connection to it. I had been overwhelmed by a flood of political actions designed to overwhelm, and I had lost my mooring, but no one had taken it. No one can take it. Joy is ours to choose, to nourish and protect. There are times when joy comes easy, and there are times when protecting our connection to it is an act of fierce defiance. A second perspective shift followed. So hold that steering wheel moment in your mind. We'll come back to that. But first, I want to name something. Everything I just said, my beliefs about the nature of joy and love, the process of questioning and challenging myself, this is theology. This is theology. And theology has never been more important than it is today. Stay with me, friends. Theology is a loaded word. And I've often heard folks say that the UU has no theology. And today is the day that I'm calling baloney. We don't often use the word theology because it sounds too theistic for many of us who are non-theists. Yes, taken literally, theology means talking about God. But our faith tradition today doesn't center on deity. Instead, we center love. So what if theology for us is not talking about God, but about that which we worship, about that which is held at the center, love? What if theology is not simply talk, but theology is a practice of infinite play where we explore, challenge, and most importantly, live relationally through our actions? Unitarian Universalists don't just have theology. We are challenged to live our theology. And our theology is not for the faint of heart. Now, I've heard a criticism of love at the center, that love is too nebulous, too hard to define, too intangible and open to interpretation to be at the core of our tradition. So let's do some theological reflecting about love. I want you to listen to these questions and statements and really turn them over for yourself. Notice where you experience resistance and where you experience confusion or curiosity, and where you experience resonance or relief. What is love? What does that word mean to you? Is it just roses and candy and romantic stuff? Is it sentimentality or warm, fuzzy feelings? Is it thoughts and prayers, a practice of gratitude? Is it service and co-liberation? Bell Hooks taught that love is critical for any social justice movement and agreed with M. Scott Peck's definition of love as the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Is love, as Valerie Carr put it, a form of sweet labor, fierce, bloody, imperfect, and life-giving? Is love a noun, or is love a verb, an action? How is a love-centering theology transformed, depending on one's understanding of what love is? I told you earlier that theology has never been more important than it is today, and I mean that, and not just because of the violence and harm being perpetrated and shaped by oppressive theologies. I mean it. Because if you want to change the world, if you want to actively participate in the healing of what is torn and broken in America today, you must take your own theology seriously. Ruby Sales, that wise leader in the civil rights movement, talked about the prayers, songs, the religious community itself, and its traditions, these expressions of theology, as the armor that her generation wore when they went out to fight for justice. The theology and the community that lived that theology together helped to keep them whole. But the next generation to take up that fight for justice, many had distanced themselves from religion, and Sales worried for them. We sent our children out into the empire without their armor on. Do you understand what I'm saying? Theology and the community that lives and plays theologically together is the armor that keeps our spirits whole. If you hearken back to the call to worship, the words of Sean Parker Dennison, this is the armor that can help us not just to survive, but to thrive. even and especially when our beloveds, our families, our neighbors, ourselves, are being threatened or attacked. Even when it feels like apocalypse. Even when it feels like apocalypse. Because here's the thing that I bet Valerie Carr knows, and that Sean Parker Dennison knows, and that I want you to know. Apocalypse doesn't mean the end of the world. That's a more recent simplification of its meaning. Apocalypse means revelation. That revelation that apocalypse means the things that were hidden are now uncovered. And that can be frightening and painful, but the thing that has been revealed is not new. It was there all along, yeah? Some of us were more aware of it than others, but now it is no longer hidden. It's out in the open, which means now we can examine it. Now we can plan. Now we can put our armor on for the work ahead, questioning through our every impulse and action. What does it mean to hold love at the center? Only then can we engage with wisdom in the deep work of healing, to which I do believe we are called. To bring love from a nebulous, intangible concept to a very tangible presence in the world. Unitarian Universalist theology, a lived theology that centers revolutionary love, is not for the faint of heart. It dares us not to respond to hate with hate, but to dig deep into wonder, to remember the inherent worth and dignity of every being, even and especially when it is not easy. When we disagree, when we are angry or afraid. Harder still, it dares us to love the opponent, even as we struggle and organize against policies and transgressions, to say, you are a part of me I do not yet know. It dares us to honor our anger by not letting anger turn to hate or to poison, to honor it, for that anger is born from that desire to protect the things we love. It dares us to create and protect space for our connections and expression of joy, just as we create and protect space for our expressions of lament. Because both lament and joy are essential expressions of love. And it dares us to be willing to risk our own safety, security, and comfort. Because as my dear friend, Reverend Samara Powers says, you are only as safe as the people you are willing to protect. I propose that to live our theology in this way sometimes means risking everything except our spirits. That is what our armor, our theology protects. All right, let's return to that steering wheel moment, that car ride where I found myself saying, they stole my joy. My first theological challenge and correction of myself was that no one can steal my joy. Joy cannot be stolen, nor can it be forced. My connection to joy is not dependent upon any other person nor their actions. But I didn't stop there. I kept going, and I found a second, more challenging theological correction. Even using the word they stole my joy drew a line between myself and them. That line of separation was born of my own distress, my fear, my grief, anger, all of which were born from love. Yet that line meant I stopped seeing them as connected, as part of me, and that inhibited love. And that, too, is part of the challenge of this theology. Even as I resist the harm, the injustice, so too must I resist the impulse toward othering. My resistance comes from love, and I do not want my resistance to become an impediment to love. This theology is how I keep my spirit whole, how I resist sinking into despair or hate. In the beloved community, there is no them. There are no walls or circles dividing us, and that is revolutionary love. Unitarian Universalism is a non-creedal religion. And she's a UU minister, and so I'm not going to tell you what to believe or what to do. Each of you must wrestle with what you believe and how willing you are to live out those beliefs, and in what ways. We are not all called to believe the same things, nor to make the same choices. Also, I am never going to tell you that everything is going to be okay. But I will tell you this. We will get through this apocalypse, this revelation, and any other apocalypse that comes along, we will get through it together. And if we put on our armor and we ground in our beliefs individually and in community, if we challenge ourselves to an integrity, an alignment of belief and action grounded in love, then we will get through this with our spirits intact. I close with apocalyptic words from Adrienne Marie Brown. Things are not getting worse. They are getting uncovered. We must hold each other tight and continue to pull back the veil. So let's do this. Amen. Ase. Blessed be.
Thank you, Sarah. We now have time for congregation discussion. I do want to make a note that we are trying very hard to end services at 11. And so in order to do that, we probably have about 7 to 8 minutes that we can devote to discussion, and we want to stay on that. And I don't know how many of you know this, Sarah. I'm going to put you on the spot. Sarah's a PhD in gratitude, deeply connected to joy. So I wanted to ask you first your thoughts on this, because I know that you studied the sermon, and so I want to know your reflections before we start passing the mic around.
I think one of the most beautiful things about these words is that they honor the totality of human experience. One of my pet peeves is, look for the silver lining, or it's going to be okay. And that's not always real. Being human is complicated, and emotions exist as, like I think Joseph mentioned, the Inside Out movie. They're the dashboard that tell us how things are going. And so if you're feeling disconnected, if you're feeling anger, that's not bad. That's just an indication that it's a chance to look at what's going on around us and do something about it. And that is so much easier. Sue mentioned this in the reading. It's so much easier to do this if we do it together. And so I just really love the interconnection that this piece brought forward, along with honoring all of the complex human experiences that go along with walking through life as, I don't know, a human.
Predictably, I have a lot of thoughts, but I'm going to... I was already thinking about this before you said that we need to be quick, but I love to talk about movies, and I'm always inspired to talk about movies. But if anybody wants to talk about my thoughts on this sermon related to the movie One Battle After Another in coffee hour, I will be responsible and use my time better there. Because I just thought of a really cool parallel with actually the reading, not even the message, with that movie. So if anybody's seen that and wants to hear my thoughts, later. But a few things. What you were just saying, I think another really interesting and important way to say that is like pain is not bad. Pain is not the thing that's hurting you. Pain is the signal that tells your brain that something's wrong. And so don't hate the pain, accept the pain, understand what the pain is telling you, and then act accordingly. The ending quote also made me think of a line from a Will Smith interview from like 10 years ago where I believe the context was that he was trying to downplay racism in our society, but what he said was very poignant, and that it was, racism is not getting worse, it's getting filmed. And he's right. The way he was saying that was incorrect, because he's rich and famous and doesn't actually understand what normal people go through. I think that's just what that made me think about. And then the final longer thought, which I can also expound on in coffee hour if anybody's interested, because I had a very interesting conversation with my family about my religious views, and they are all, of course, very Christian, and it was a good, positive conversation, but I felt like I was being attacked on all sides because it was three people saying, like, why don't you believe in Jesus? And I was like, I like Jesus. But specifically in relation to your message, I think the idea of theology being this thing that we carry forward with us without being deists or theists, and the idea of the armor, and like when you were talking about, I forget who it was, but she was upset and concerned about people going into the world without the armor of the religious teachings. And that's like in the book of Romans, I think. That's the armor of God. Like that's literally in there. Like that's, and it is, Christians, and particularly the kind of Christian that I was raised, believe very literally in the idea of spiritual warfare, and that there are demons and Satan and all of these things. But I think that is more of a metaphor for the evils that exist in our world that we do have to have armor against, and we have to like join together and resist those things. But again, I'll be responsible, and we can expound on that later.
We'll also be quick. Ironically, I was also thinking of a piece of media because of this. If anyone has ever seen Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, it's a dramatization of an actual almost 15-year fight for postal workers in the UK to get their criminal convictions vacated and you know, other prosecutions vacated because of a computer error that the post office would not admit, that said they all owed over like 20,000 pounds, and it destroyed lots of lives. And the way they got over that was, A, the love of one guy who just did not let go of this for 12 years and started, you know, cooking meals for his fellow postmasters in a central location. And, you know, more and more people started to come. And, you know, a lot of people went through a lot of mental health struggles at that time because they were feeling that that emotional symptom of something is wrong. And only, you know, by spending time together and eating cake every month, were they able to get through those 15 years. So would recommend it if you were.
I also have a movie to reference, but I don't remember its name, and it wasn't a very important movie. It affected me greatly. It was based on a real event of a non-Mennonite man going into a Mennonite church, a Mennonite school in Pennsylvania, and shooting a number of the girls and killing some. It was mostly based on the shooter's family's experience with the Mennonites. And I have a Mennonite grandfather, so this affected me. When the public gave inappropriate toys to the Mennonite families to cheer them up, they gave those toys to the shooters' children. The Mennonites were the only people in the community who came to the shooter's funeral. And this really greatly affected me. My grandfather left the church as a young man, never even told his children he was raised Mennonite. I found that doing genealogy.
I am not a huge fan of Silver Linings. I'm not a huge fan of It Could Be Worse. I'm not a huge fan of, but I think the opposite is also true. I used to have a really bad habit of just saying, well, everything's whack, so who cares? And I think teaching marketing, I hate corporations, and now I teach marketing. And it's like, wow, what a dynamic switch that is. And when it comes to teaching these students about marketing, and trying to be less cynical, giving students and other people a way out, some kind of constructive thing that they can do, practicing resistance in the way you can, I feel like that also dispels hatred, because I feel like hatred is an act of desperation. You don't have any other options. I mean, nobody likes hating, except for people who do, and that sucks for them and everyone else. But that's my thought. I don't know.
There you go.
Oh, that reminds me of something I talked about here a few months ago in being at protests, and when someone would drive by giving us the finger, we would all cheer. And it was like this joyful moment in resistance.
You're noticing us, right? I have so many thoughts too. This is a great message, but you know, I'll pick out the ones that really stood out. When you said nobody could steal my joy, and that really resonated with me. A lot of the clients I work with will say, oh, my husband makes me so mad, and you know, other people have this power over me. And I always say, you know, that you're giving them that power, and you need to own. If you're angry, that's okay, but own that, you know? So own your joy. And my favorite historian, Heather Cox Richardson, which I think everybody in the world knows who she is now, she talked about go ahead and feel joy and do things that you enjoy doing despite whatever everything else that's going on. And that really surprised me, because I thought, you know, sometimes I'll read on Facebook how people talk about really frivolous things, you know, and it's like we're in the middle of this horror show, you know, and that made me think it's okay to be lighthearted and, you know, talk about shoes or whatever, you know.
Annie, you'll be the last comment. And I just want to remind everyone that you use 30 Days of Love starts in mid-January. There'll be lots of great content around this topic with Love at the Center.
Thanks. The whole theology thing really struck me, having recently read A History of Unitarian Universalism. And the Unitarians were not formally a church until about 1830. But they were always Unitarians all the way back. The Council of Nicaea was about two things. One is, who is Jesus in relation to God? I don't think Jesus cared about that. And what was the other one? And what books are going to be in the Bible? Well, the Trinitarians won, but the Unitarians have always been non-theological. They care about what you do, not about what you believe. And, you know, that has come up all the way from the Council of Nicaea, and there were wars fought over what do people believe at that time. It's just horrendous. I can only picture Jesus with his head in his hands saying, "What are you doing? I told you to help the poor." But then, you know, having it be about beliefs make it a lot easier to control people.
Thank you. We will continue this conversation downstairs in coffee hour. Thanks, Sarah.